This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Big Bear Mark.
This is Luke the Wonder Cub.
And this is a podcast for Brekkie Bears
on Joy 94.9.
This is Big Bear Mark, and I am absolutely thrilled to have Drag Race's Gothic Queen, the sickeningly scary, the goddess of the dark, Sharon Needles, in the studio with me.
How are you, Mark?
I'm lovely, thank you, Sharon.
Thank you. As I'm going to call you for the rest of this recording, Mark of the Beast 666. Yes,
lovely. Oh, it's sending shivers up my spine. It is. Now, Sharon, on your website, there's a little quote saying that you're stupid genius, reviled sweetheart, and PBR princess. Now, of course, we don't really know what PBR in Australia stands
for. Do you know what a PBR is?
It's a beer, isn't it?
PBR is probably America's most famous cheap beer. And PBR stands for Pabst Blue Ribbon. And, you know, a lot of people make fun of it for being really cheap and being really white trash. But, you know, it says the word blue ribbon. And in my eyes, blue ribbon means it must have won a prize at one time or another. I'm telling you, I drink so much Pabst Blue Ribbon, I drink so much PBR, that if I was a golden girl, they would call me PB Arthur. Do they have golden girls here?
Oh, we know gold girls very well, oh, yes.
Okay. Thanks, Satan.
Yeah. In fact, one of the editors is a friend of ours who does Where the Bears Are.
Oh, wow.
In LA. It's Rick Coop.
Wow.
So we know Rick very well here.
I'm surprised to hear someone from Golden Girls is still alive other than Betty White.
I know. Well, Betty, you have to have a theory about why Betty White's still alive, don't you?
Methamphetamines is my guess.
Now, talking about methamphetamines, you grew up in Newton, Iowa, didn't you?
Newton, Iowa, home of Maytag dishwashers and dryers, and Time Magazine called it the meth capital of the world on the cover of a issue of Time Magazine in 1996, and I can vouch for that title.
Well, I grew up near Sydney, so I know what you mean by that.
They were good times, weren't they, Mark?
They were.
Good times.
The best of times.
I've never been thinner.
Nor had I. Well, that was a long time ago, as you can see, Sharon. I've had one too many dinners since then. So the Midwest must have been a hard place to grow up. Let's face it. It's not.
Yeah, I don't know if a lot of your listeners are aware of what Midwest culture like is in America, but it is far from Hollywood and as far as from New York City as you can possibly get. And it's a mecca for normalcy. It's a mecca for boringness, and it's a mecca for a lot of ill-informed, uneducated, small-minded individuals. And I knew I was a fucking movie star since I was 3 years old. Unfortunately, the people around me just weren't really rallying against that. So it was a trying time, but I think we live in a culture right now where so many people are trying to protect kids and youngsters from being bullied and being harassed. But if it wasn't for those bullies and harassment, I don't think I would be the superstar that you see sitting across from you right now.
That's right, because Sharon, you definitely come, your character comes off as a very, sometimes aggressive and sometimes obviously fabulous, but, you know, that punk aggressiveness comes through in Sharon quite a lot.
Well, and a lot of people who watched my season of RuPaul's Drag Race said you were the first drag queen to bring punk rock into such an art form that is based around beauty. And I love when people say that, but I can't really take that title. I think a lot of drag queens want to look like beautiful women because they want to hide and shellac over the timid gay man that is underneath. I was more inspired by, and people say I was the first one to bring punk into drag, but I have to disagree. You look at RuPaul's Paul's early career, which was very punk rock. You look at people like Jane County, the first transsexual of punk rock. In the 70s, you look at Lady Bunny, you look at Pete Burns, you look at Boy George, and you look at Australian's very own Lee Bowery, who is a huge inspiration to me growing up. So I think I was just carrying on the tradition of keeping the art of drag very transgressive, very punk rock, and basically saying, if I can't have the rights that any normal human being deserves, then I'm going to scare the shit out of you until I get them.
That's a great philosophy. I love that.
Thank you.
It's like, you know.
And it's so much easier being scary than pretty. I'm telling you, a bucket of blood is like 30 minutes. Looking like a beautiful woman takes hours.
Well, you managed to combine the two very well, I have to say.
Hey, I'm a jack off of all trades.
Exactly. Now, 2004, you moved to Philadelphia.
To Pittsburgh. Yes, mistaken. They're both in the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are both in the state of Pennsylvania. That's a lot of P's for one sentence.
It is.
But they're culturally so different. Pittsburgh is a very blue collar Rust Belt city that has created such great icons like Christina Aguilera and Andy Warhol. And I'm so happy to be in a list of people who survived in a dying city. And since being on RuPaul's Drag Race, I've had a lot of opportunities to live in London, to live in New York, and to live in Los Angeles, but when you find home, it's just home. So I love.
So you'd still say Pittsburgh is home.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is home. Yep. Yeah, I in New York and in Hollywood, I'm like a 6 on the fuck scale, and in Pittsburgh, I'm a 10. So why leave? You know, why leave heaven?
Well, this is exactly right, and you're part of a drag troupe called The House of Haunt.
The House of Haunt, yes. Well, before I was on RuPaul's Drag Race, me and my ex-partner Alaska Thunderfuck created a legendary drag troupe that was basically fighting the ideals of what drag was supposed to be or what audiences expected drag to be. Mm. So instead of doing beautiful ballads and effortless beauty, we really challenged beauty stereotypes and basically was just an old school punk rock mess, which a lot of drag queens were questioning how this would ever become successful. But if you ever step out outside of yourself as an entertainer and step into the shoes of an exhibitionist or someone who likes to view this type of material, the more shocking and the more grotesque something is, the more people are more guided to look at it. I can't spend a whole hour watching an episode of Real Housewives, but if I saw a car accident with mutilated bodies all over the street, as sick, as sad as it sounds, I can't help but watch.
And I agree. Was it at all a reaction to the beauty pageant, that the sort of vanilla drag that you see?
Well, first, let's get one thing straight. I love pageant drag, and yeah. I love the dedication to perfecting a Western concept of consumeristic female beauty applied to a male specimen. I love that, and it's to me, that's very punk rock. Any form of drag to me is punk rock. You don't need vomit and twin towers and fake blood to make a huge statement. And I also think that a man becoming a visually consumable product of female beauty, I think that's pretty punk rock. I just saw so many of them, and it didn't challenge me as an entertainer. I think half of what I do on stage is if I'm not having half the fun, then I don't think anyone's having fun.
That's fantastic. Well, let's talk about Drag Race. We have to talk about it, I suppose.
RuPaul's Drag Race, start your engines.
And I have to say, you do make a fantastic RuPaul as well. That video clip with Willem, RuPaulogize,
yes.
My God.
Well, I can't take all the credit for that. Of course, the legendary and Australian hairstylist and makeup artist for RuPaul's Drag Race for the last 23 years, Matthew Anderson, did my hair and makeup for that. And I said, Willem, I will do it. Under two conditions. One, we in no way, I can do an homage to RuPaul, but I will not mock her. There's a fine line between mocking and homage. And second, I have to make sure that Matthew Anderson makes me look like her, because RuPaul's not a drag queen anymore. She's a walking special effects. She is rope, strings, tape, glue, cement, and that's just the shoes.
Oh my God. That's fantastic. So Is it true that you didn't think you could win the season when you went on?
Well, I didn't think I could get on. First of all, my name is Sharon Needles, which if you know...
Well, tell us about the name.
Well, I can see in Australia it might not translate, just like Courtney Act doesn't translate to American audiences because of the accent of being caught in the act. But Sharon Needles is basically slang for sharing hypodermic needles while injecting heroin.
That's what I thought. I was just wanting to clarify
I'm glad that the Aussie audiences were brave enough and smart enough to catch up on that. And the reason I named myself Sharon Needles was because it was a reference to how in the 90s, it was how straight people got AIDS. And I wanted people to know that AIDS was an equal opportunity killer. It wasn't just our disease. It was everyone's disease. So it was just a really tongue-in-cheek and, of course, nasty way of bringing up a deathly subject. But my name was Sharon Needles. I was a freak queen. I was transgressive. I did a lot of punk rock acts. I did things that even pushed my own audiences away at times. And I just didn't think I would be selected. What my boyfriend at the time, Alaska Thunderfuck, had auditioned for every single season. Yeah. And all I could think was, if that bitch makes it, I'm going to be so jealous if I just didn't give it a try. So I gave it a try, and I was casted almost immediately. I've even run into RuPaul, who said while she was watching my audition tape, she just pointed right at the screen and said, "That one. I want that one. I want that girl." And at the time, that was kind of shocking to me. But if you go back and you read RuPaul's books, or if you do some history on RuPaul's legacy, you will see that she has done some very transgressive, very punk rock, very gender fuck art in her past. Once being cast on the show, I realized that I was an easy off, as we call them in the industry, or a sacrificial lamb, as you say. Yeah. Someone to be on the show to make a big stink and some ratings, but get rid of quickly. I think once Rue took some investment in me, and then once the show aired and the American people, and not only in America but all over the world, were looking at Sharon Needles like a compact mirror. They were seeing glimpses of themselves. They were seeing their own beauty and their own anxieties reflected back at them. And when they rallied against me, that's when I realized that the destiny of me being a superstar was actually going to come true.
Yeah. And I mean, you definitely had the crowd support. I mean, I remember watching it a couple of 2 years ago when it was on, and we were all rooting for you, definitely. I mean, it was just...
Well, my season was the first season where RuPaul had asked the universe to tweet and to Facebook and to text her who they thought America's Next Drag Superstar should be. And I say this all the time, RuPaul may have put the crown on my head, but it's the world that allowed me to hold that crown, and I'm in permanent debt to them every single day. That's why I don't call my performances. I call them thank you notes.
Lovely. Now, that it was a big season. You had Chad Michaels on, and Fifi O'Hara was your other top three. Now, of course, there is a bit of a famous rivalry between you and Fifi, to say the least. How is the relationship with Fifi going, or is there?
Well, now our relationship's great, because anytime she needs to borrow money, she knows who to call. When the show was airing and I saw the way people were treating her on social media, I just lived it up. I was like, this person made my life a living hell the whole time I was filming. Then I kind of had a switch in thinking, and then I realized that no one on this planet deserves to have the entire world attack them social media style just for being growing personally and being vulnerable on film. Anything Fifi ever said on that show is something I have said to another drag queen a million times. I just decided to choose my words and actions with care while I was there on set. So I just applaud her for being a bitch, because I don't think you can be a drag queen in today's climate without being a cutthroat, foul-mouthed, aggressive, angry human. I think that is a core base of what a drag queen really is an angry, distraught person who uses drag as a punching bag instead of using someone's face. So at the end of the day, I kind of applaud her for being that honest. If I treated Fifi the way I wanted to treat her, I probably wouldn't be voted America's Next Drag Superstar because I would be in prison for manslaughter.
Fair enough. And talking about almost going to prison. Well, not going to prison. She got kicked off the show. The week that Willem got kicked off the show, it was you and Fifi in the bottom two.
Correct.
And then we had the surprise announcement that Willem was disqualified and got kicked off. How did that pan out, or how did you feel about that?
Well, as a collective, the cast was, we were afraid. Mm. The whole time we were there, we were afraid. We didn't find a cell phone. We didn't find computers. We didn't talk to people outside of the casting because I was afraid my opportunity was going to be jeopardized. Willem is an amazing entertainer who's been able to work in so many facets of music and television and film and sitcoms that I just think that on RuPaul's Drag Race, I just don't think she took it as serious as the rest of us. I think the circumstances that could have happened due to her actions didn't frighten her like they did us. So, and I think that's what led to her disqualification. At the time, I was very thankful that Willem got disqualified because I knew it was going to be very difficult to do a lip sync presentation to a 70s pop song, It's a Raining Man, against Fifi O'Hara. Mm-hmm. After watching the episode, I kind of wish Willem would have stayed because I think we all know who would have won.
Yes.
Kept their wig and their heels on.
Mm-hmm. And I have seen a little parody online of you and another drag queen pretending to be Fifi.
Yes. Well, and right when that aired, it was I would tour with that song, and there would be drag queens all over the world who would want to portray Fifi, but they always wanted to portray her foully. If you can't make fun of yourself, how the hell are you going to make fun of somebody else? Can I get an amen in here?
Amen, definitely. Now, it was actually the first season as well, which they taped all three of you, the last three people, winning. Mm-hmm. And you didn't find out until it actually aired if you'd won or not. Is that actually true?
It's actually true.
Yeah, that's what happened.
And I can say this about RuPaul's Drag Race is I don't really watch a lot of reality television show before Drag Race. And now I've become fascinated with it because I'm part of a reality show legacy. So I watch other reality shows and competitive shows. And I will tell you this, every single one of those shows is completely scripted. It's completely manipulated. RuPaul's Drag Race, I'm telling you, as campy and as strange as this program is, and as cult classically known as it is and kind of small, it is the realest reality show you will ever see in your life. You take 13 damaged, dented cans, throw a wig and some lipstick on it, lock it in a room for 2 months, and take its booze and cigarettes away. You don't need to edit anything. The story tells itself. So was the final three of us learning about it live on television, it was completely true. So, and we didn't know about 5 minutes. We taped the finale, and 5 minutes during the commercial break, a producer came up to us and said, "We're gonna film you all winning," and Rue had to tell the audience, "Listen here, they're all gonna win. You leak this to anyone, I'll personally find your address and I'll murder you
and hunt you down." Yeah.
But and if you look at my reaction when I won, I didn't break down. I didn't start crying. I didn't thank the world and wish for world peace. I basically just said happy Halloween because I knew it would eventually be leaked that it was a false win. And I didn't want my fans to think that that I was dogging them this whole time in order to win $100,000 and to pursue my own benefits for my career. So a lot of people found it strange that I just said happy Halloween, but I just needed to say something genuine that wasn't pulling everyone's, leg.
Yeah, exactly. And is it true that you also declined to go on to All Stars when it came up?
Well, when All Stars asked the people to vote who they thought should be on the show.
Yeah.
And I won that online vote, and that wasn't because I'm the best. It's not because I'm the prettiest or the most talented. It was because I was the Gaga of the moment. I was Bianca Del Rio right at that second.
That's right.
So that's why I got the highest amount of votes. I mean, it was all politics. And I mean, if you think about it, you can't put someone who just won a reality show and put them right back into the competition. So though I did decline, it was also written in the contract that no former winners could partake in All Stars, nor did I want to, because they started filming 3 days after the win. So that's why I always applaud Chad Michaels for winning All Stars, not just for winning All Stars, but having 3 days prepare for it. And I'm not lying, three days from crowning to the first day of filming of All Stars. So that's why she is the ultimate winner of the show. Not only could she survive through my season, but survive through her own with only 3 days to prepare. I did have a little influence on who I wanted to take my spot, and I did push for Mimi I'm First, Pandora Box, and Tammy Brown, because they were the three queens who I thought could have gone just as far as I did, given the opportunity to survive one more day.
Mm. And of course, Pandora Box and Mimi on First both went on
and left the first episode.
And I was so disappointed when Pandora left. The whole fight with Mimi, and it was just.
You sit down with Pandora Box over a couple martinis, and you won't hear nothing but to this day.
Well, of course, after Drag Race, you actually started to host a horror show on Logo, didn't you?
Well, Fierce. Once I won RuPaul's Drag Race, I knew my time was limited. I wasn't famous. I was reality television show famous. I had one calendar year to show my chops, so I wanted everything that ever swum in a little gay boy's head from Newton, Iowa to become true immediately. That's why I wanted to be a horror host, because I was grown up on Rhonda Shear and Elvira and Vampyra and I see a lot of those characters in Sharon, something very sweet and tangible, but dark and nasty. So I did Fierce for Logo TV, where I introduced horror movies. But I didn't want to stop there. Like, I wanted to be a pop star. I wanted to be Madonna. I wanted to be Gaga. I wanted that piece. So that's when my album PG-13 came out. I wanted to be a billboard. I wanted my own billboard in Times Square. So I became the face of PETA. I wanted to be a cover girl. I became the most influential gay man by Out Magazine in the States. And it was just snowballing accomplishment after accomplishment in 1 year.
You just covered my next three topics. So, but
I'm sorry, I just had to get them out because I didn't know when you were going to cut me off. I used to be a cover girl, and now I'm doing radio shows with you in the middle of Melbourne. You see how fame treats you?
it's all about hill slope, I know. But look,
I feel as stagnant as the satanic Ferris wheel in this town.
Yeah, we don't mention that. Yeah,
is it up and running?
Yeah, it is up and running. Well, you can go on and have a
see. It goes to show, even if you have a break in your career, you'll still spin again.
You can still come back. That's right. And of course, Pittsburgh City Council had a Sharon Needles Day.
Sharon Needles Day. Yes, I mean, and that's weird. You go from a city where you've been arrested in three times to a city where you have your own holiday, and that was great. It was. But I decided to dedicate it more to just anyone else in the state of Pennsylvania who's struggling with identity or gay, straight, bi. I don't really care about what you want to stick in your mouth. Really more just about how you're being treated as a person, especially if you tend to be a little off the beaten path. So I made sure to dedicate that day to every weirdo in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Tell me about your work with PETA as well, because you are a well-known vegetarian. Now, am I right? It's vegetarian. It's not vegan. It's not
vegan only during Lent, and that's because it's right before swimsuit season.
Lovely. Okay, so PETA, did PETA come to you or did you go to them?
PETA came to me because of how vocal I was about being a vegetarian on RuPaul's Drag Race. And I was so hesitant to work with PETA. I know PETA has done some drastic out there stuff that I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. I think they've used shock advertisements that are completely disgusting. I think they have gotten in people's faces and made them completely angry. And then they said, Sharon, but isn't that what you do for a living? And it hit me. And I was like, I do shocking things for attention. I do things I'm not even sure are in my own consciousness of morality. I do things to make a statement with by making a huge bloody mess. So the more we started talking about how we both use shock imagery and we both use scare tactics to get our message across, the more I got involved with them. And I said, well, hey, look, I collect taxidermy. I collect a lot of vintage furs. I have animal organs in jars. I have taxidermied baby chickens all over my house. I have a sick collection of dead animals in my home. These were things I could not prevent, though I choose to collect for its morbidity. Is morbidity a word?
It is now.
It is now.
Yeah.
I said the only thing I have a problem with is the Holocaust-like conditions of raising animals for food and treating them so lesser than any other life. So I said if I could just work on that aspect of the campaign, that I'd be more than willing. So that's why we said eating animals or being a vegetarian doesn't have to cost you an arm and a leg. And it was me with chopped off human body parts all over me. And it was a huge billboard in Times Square. Oh, my mother was so proud.
One of those lovely moments.
One of those Hallmark moments.
Exactly. Now, I can't go past an interview without talking about Alaska Thunderfuck, as you already have.
Yes.
Famous, you're probably the most famous drag couple ever. How are you still in touch with Alaska? It's been about a year since you broke up.
We're as in touch as much as we can.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the reasons why we started separating ways is because we were just as much in contact with each other when we were together as we are now. We both had huge dreams, and with big dreams comes huge sacrifices, and with huge sacrifices come large egos, and basically we were shooting through space trying to reach the same star, and we just found two stars in separate universes. And if you take the word boyfriend and you drop the word boy, then what you have is a really great friend, and friends are forever and boyfriends are temporary.
Exactly. Dress to Kill is your new single.
Dress to Kill.
And it's from your album PG-13, which has great, so like This Club is a Haunted House, etc. on it, available from iTunes. And basically, that film clip for Dress to Kill is quite amazing, I have to say. Can you just give me the concept? Because I'll let people know. You're on a runway. You've got different outfits on. The audience, though, is all dressed in white, all tied up with paper bags on the heads and big sad faces.
Sad faces, yes.
Is there a con? What's going on there? Because it's pretty freaky.
If you ever go to Fashion Week, if you ever are allowed to go to Fashion Week, and you see the first three rows, it's always the press.
Yeah.
And the press loved me the first year, and I was on such a high roller coaster, and it was just Sharon Needles can do no wrong. Sharon Needles could do wrong. And then the climate changed, and then it was the press and online blogs got very attackive, and I get that. If a roller coaster is going up, it only has one place to go but down, and I was finding that my work was coming under a lot of scrutiny, and I was being challenged a lot for what I was personally and funding to the world. And I was kind of shocked that what I decided to give out to the world was now being negatively attacked by the press. So I wanted to make sure that the press, just for one day, was silenced and strapped into my brain, strapped into my world. And I was allowing them a one-way ticket to what I would like to think is the stupidity and the genius that is the Rolodex of my mind. And it was basically my way of just creating my own world where the press had no say in it. And strangely enough, it was the most highly applauded video I think I've ever...
It's a great video. I have to say, I really love it. And congratulations to you.
There's actually a lot of other like nuanced secrets in there that I don't know if your fans would get. But I mean, every song I've written and every video I do, they're not just haphazard fashion imagery. They really are a Rolodex of sub-pop culture and things for kids to find out.
Yeah, as you can tell in my flanny and my jeans, yeah, I'm really high fashion of myself.
But you look great. In Pittsburgh, you're a total hipster right now.
Oh, thank you.
Flannel and beard? Yes, yeah. I could hook you up in a minute.
It's the bear look.
That's funny you bring up a video. We actually just shot the last and final single for PG-13. So.
Oh, what's the last single?
I don't know if I should mention it.
Yeah, I can't mention it? Okay.
I can mention it that we filmed it with Amanda Lepore, though.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. I'll be looking forward to seeing that one.
Oh, thank you.
Oh. Of course, you do actually also have your own online shop on your website, yes. SharonNeedles.com.
Yes.
So if the people want to get their hands on a bit of Sharon wear.
It's Sharon Needles by GMAC. It's a ready-to-wear streetwear line that ranges from size extra small to XXL because I don't body shame or try to jeopardize any body type or size from looking fierce. But it's a ready-to-wear male and female line. Mm. We also make high-end gowns up for a gal up to 6'2". So, because I know what it's like to be a girl on the taller side.
Damn, I'm 6'4".
Oh well, just wear a kitten pump.
That's right.
Just wear a kitten heel with that, and you should be fine, darling. But it's very affordable. I don't think there's anything in the line that's over $120. So it's affordable for people on all budgets, and it's just a transgressive line. We have mini dresses that have the real aerial view photographs of the Jim Jones massacre on them. So we have real dead men, women, and children printed on dresses. We have the Twin Tower leggings, which are the original World Trade Center done on leggings and mini dresses. We have the Mandy 200, which is Amanda Lepore's lips printed 200 times on leggings, tank tops, gowns. We have the cocaine leggings, which is just a giant line of cocaine lining up the back of the leg.
Brilliant.
We have a bag, which is just bags of Molly printed all over a messenger bag. So it's very transgressive, very punk rock, all stuff designed to make your parents hate you more.
Lovely. And that's what we need. of course, you've been brought out by Stephen and the guys from In the Dark Promotions to do a couple of gigs around Australia.
Yes.
And of course, we have to talk about them. Tomorrow night, you're doing Little Shop of Horrors, the Swagger's 4th birthday down at the bottom end at Collins Street, Little Collins Street, I should say, 579 Little Collins Street, Melbourne. Doors are opening up at 11 p.m. and it's super late.
That's super late to you?
No, till super late. So 11 p.m. till super late. So I'm assuming it will be going to all hours in the morning.
Well, I hope so.
Or the morning. And so what do we expect from Sharon at the at Swagger's birthday party?
Well, for this is my second Australian tour. And my first Australian tour was right when the album started. So I was still a little baby chicky, still learning the ropes of doing a full-fledged pop tour. I think the fans can expect a lot of high fashion, a lot of humor, a lot of punk rock, and a lot of shock rock refinement.
That's cool. Now, look, you're not only doing Melbourne, of course. You're doing Sydney on Saturday night at the midnight shift.
Oh, am I at the midnight shift?
Yeah, the midnight shift.
I didn't even know. I love that bar.
Yeah, I'm originally from Sydney, and I used to live at the midnight shift.
When I'm at Sydney and I'm usually working, I usually don't work midnight shift, but that's where I usually spend every other night. I absolutely love that place. It put on the great Priscilla show as well.
Fantastic. Then, God help you, you're going to Adelaide and Perth.
I hope your Perth and Adelaide listeners aren't listening.
No, you know, they will be.
I love Adelaide. Adelaide holds the second largest fringe festival in the world.
They do indeed.
And it is a fabulous festival with carny rides that you'll be lucky if you get off of alive, which are my favorite.
Yep.
The first time I was in Adelaide, I swam in the Arctic Ocean?
It's the one south, yes.
Yeah, I swam in the South Ocean and I got chased by jellyfish. I got 666 tattooed on my wrist by a nun.
By a nun?
Yeah, and Perth is a beautiful city where it's so beautiful, and it reminds me of Pittsburgh, where everyone works in the mining industry. Mm-hmm. There's tons of methamphetamines. It's a great town.
It is actually a great town. I shouldn't have said that. I'm very sorry.
And you know, RuPaul's husband comes from Perth.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And they own a ranch together now.
Wow. So
I can't believe you were just going to downgrade Perth and Adelaide.
I was going to diss them. I know. It's horrible.
It's because you're in Melbourne. Shame. Everyone in Melbourne thinks they live in the hipster capital of the world.
Well, we sort of do.
Yeah.
Almost.
Well, you know what I love about this town is Naked for Satan. Have you ever been?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, they make the best margarita.
Yeah, There's another place just around the corner here called Mamacita, which makes a great margarita as well.
And what's the street is Naked for Satan on?
That's Brunswick Street.
Brunswick, and they have great fetish shops. Yep. And I really need to get up there. I'm out of lube.
Yeah, definitely. There's a great place called Man House that you'd feel right at home in. And
sure, you've been there several times, Marky Mark, haven't you?
It's my second
home. Come on, Marky, admit it.
It is my second home, yes. Look, I have to say, in Perth, you're at Connections Nightclub.
Connections is a great club.
And everyone in Perth knows Connections Nightclub. It's been there forever, and it's like the old
Halloween is every day in that club.
Exactly. And in Adelaide, which it will be on Friday night, you're at Apple Bar in Synagogue Place.
Oh, sounds great.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to get back to Adelaide.
Yeah, I'd love to. I need to get back to Adelaide. I haven't been there since 1988, which was before you were born.
Honey, I've survived the Inquisition and I still look 17.
Yes, you do, actually. Now, I did see on your Facebook page this morning when I was perusing it, a nice little plaster cast of your lower face. Now, what was the story around that?
Well, for my new music video, which is not going to be revealed, I needed to wear some prosthetic lips. So I'm actually dating a special effects makeup artist. He's amazing. He's done some very great pieces for me. And these were some very challenging pieces because these weren't supposed to look, you know, grotesque or over the top. They were supposed to look very, very realistic. Yeah. And so my next music video is all dedicated to my obsession, my love, and devotion to plastic surgery. So we needed to do some things that a surgeon couldn't do live on camera.
Very good. Very good. So what's the spooky future for Sharon Needles? What does the future hold?
It's all about trumping my own game. Fame is fleeting, and you really have to ask yourself, is it worth fighting for? And I just think fame is like a child with ADHD. They're a handful, they're a hassle, but it was your decision to take it on, and it's my mothering duty to make sure that I see it to the end. So I just hope I keep outdoing myself, out trumping myself, keep creating purchasable, transgressive art, and that the kids support me till the day I die again.
And I'm sure they will, and we will here in Australia. We absolutely love you, Sharon.
Oh, thank you. I say this in a lot of countries, but I'm lying. But Australia is seriously my second home. It's just such a wonderful culture, beautiful people, and I know they don't want to hear this, but it just really reminds me of America.
We don't mind. We don't mind, honestly.
It's so Americanized, and I love it.
Yeah. Look, if you're ever in Melbourne again, please come and see me again, because I'd love to talk to you. You're absolutely amazing.
Of course.
And we're going to play Dress to Kill, which is your latest single from PG-13, of course. As I said, thank you very much for joining me today.
As always, Mark of the Beast.
And this is Mark, and I've been with the absolutely amazing Sharon Needles. You're here on Brekkie Bears.
Happy Halloween.
St. Mark's look. I'm hard as concrete, rubber, lick my rock. Fresh will make you sick, you know I never do it by the book. Yeah.
underground. Taxidermy round my neck, my perfume is my whiskey breath, while you were wearing rhinestones by the pound.
Being a podcast for the Brekkie Bears on Joy 94.9.
If you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes and Stitcher? Woof grr.
Woof grr.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.